This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, everybody. It's time for the final Russell Westbrook update for the 2023-24 NBA regular season.
Russell Westbrook, he could sure score triple doubles. But he sure as hell can't think straight when he's trying to make a pass. It's the Russell Westbrook update.
So when we last left Russ on March 1st, he was injured against the Wizards. He came back on March 25th, scored 14 points in a 133-116 loss to Indiana.
Against the Sixers on March 27th, Russ scored 6 points in a 108-107 victory.
Against the Magic, he scored 5 points in a 197 win. Against the Hornets on March 31st, he scored 11 points in a 130-118 win. Against the Kings in a 14-point loss on April 2nd, he scored 20 points. Against the Nuggets on April 4th, he scored 12 points in a 102-100 win. On April 5th against the Jazz, where the Clippers won by 29 points, he scored 17 points. Against the Cavs on April 7th, he scored 8 points in a 120-118 win. Against the Suns on April 9th, he scored 16 points in a 105-92 win. In his last game of the regular season, he scored 4 points in a 110-109 loss. Now, Chico, I have some amazing news to share.
Ooh, I want to hear some amazing news.
Russ made Shaq in the full last week.
Oh, boy.
And I want to play this clip right here. It's against the Nuggets. Russ makes a shot, and the shot just goes wildly. Not even, like, goes over the backboard.
That was a half-court shot.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm sharing the screen from Shaq in the Fool. Chico, can you describe what's on the screen right
it
now?
Is a Bricko board. Not a Plinko board. A Bricko board.
And who's in the Bob Barker role?
I have absolutely no idea.
It's Ernie Johnson, silly. You can't tell by the face.
Oh, no, I couldn't. I'm not going to lie to you. Hey, unless it's Kenny the Jet Smith or Charles Barkley or Shaq, I could honestly give two. Anyway.
Well, to be fair, he's not wearing the glasses.
There you go.
Now you see why people got full thinking that Superman and Clark Kent were two completely different people. But that's not even the big part of this. The biggest game for the Clippers was the game he didn't even play in the last game of regular season at Crypto.com Arena, the Clippers' final regular season game there. Now, Chico, I don't know if you know this, but apparently the Clippers have a thing where if an opposing player misses 2 free throws in the fourth quarter, every fan gets free chicken. So do you know who was at the free throw line for the Rockets?
I know this because we were talking about it earlier today, but it is Boban.
Boban was at the line for the Rockets, and he missed the first shot. And he was like, you know what? This is on me. He intentionally bricked the second shot, and everybody at Crypto.com Arena got free chicken, and everybody went nuts.
Everybody goes nuts over the chicken. Everybody loves the chicken.
Who was even sponsoring that?
I don't know.
I gotta look. Free chicken Clippers. Oh, a free Chick-fil-A sandwich. Oh. Well.
Oh, God.
At least it's free. You don't have to pay for anything.
Yeah, but so. It's the principle of the thing. I'm eating this chicken. I'm endorsing their hatred.
Well, no, if it's free, that means they're losing money.
That is fair.
So who are the Clippers playing in the playoffs? I gotta look. NBA playoffs Clippers.
They're playing the Mavericks on Sunday as we record this.
Okay, Sunday, April 21st is game one at 3:30. Okay, so who knows? Maybe this is the Clippers' year. They're fourth in the Western Conference. It's a 4-5 matchup. It can go either way. But rest assured, if Russ does do something silly in that series, we are going to talk about it. But until then, it's time for a true story. Well, not a true story, but a heartwarming story about five little girls who go from rags to riches. Let's play the theme song.
An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Punisher! Control!
Hey, before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train!
Episode 467, submission number 611, Rags to Riches. Rags to Riches aired on the NBC television network from March 1987 to January 15, 1988 for 20 episodes over two seasons. What does March 1987 look like in our history, Greg?
Well, I know that was around the time of WrestleMania 3.
Well, it didn't have Susan St. James, so I don't care.
Okay, we don't have anything from March of 87, but this will fall between O'Hara, which premiered in January of 1987, and Mr. President, which premiered on May 3rd of 1987. We actually don't have that many entries from 1987 between January and June. We have a lot of entries in September, you know that.
And honestly, I just saw that we're going to be covering this in November, if my math is correct, as part of the, you know what? I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's just play the theme music.
Okay, let's play it. Hold on. I think we can do it live. Hold on.
Oh, okay. oh, God. Excuse me.
All right, we're doing this live. Here's the theme to Rags to Riches.
One of those shows that the theme not only tells the story, but also informs the mood. By the way, theme song written by future It Was a Thing Hall of Famer, Mark Mueller, who basically composed half of the Disney Afternoon.
Didn't we just talk about him?
No, we talked about Jim Magan, who worked with Mark Mueller on the same half of the Disney Afternoon.
Oh.
Yeah, we talked about him on... Oh, Jesus, I can't believe we're talking about this again.
What is it?
Titanic, the legend lives... Titanic, the Adventures of Rapping Dog. I don't know.
That's what it should have been called.
But yeah, it may be hard to believe, but that theme pretty much imparted the whole mood of the series. Let me explain. One of the biggest things to come out of the late 70s and the 80s were the late 50s and the 60s, believe it or not. I mean, take a look at the glut of remakes that were released. La Bamba was big. Sha-na-na was really big. And that sort of aesthetic would come into play as we take a look at a bachelor billionaire in need of an image makeover and a group of girls in need of a home and a network in need of some solid family programming that doesn't involve Thursday nights or aliens. But in order to tell that story, we need to go back a bit to 1977. In 1977, we had a surprise hit on Broadway, a musical adaptation of the comic strip Little Orphan Annie, with music by Charles Strauss, lyrics by Martin Charnin, and a book by Thomas Meehan. It was nominated for 10 Tonys, winning 7. Ray Stark of Rastar fame would bring the musical to theaters with John Huston, yes, that John Huston, directing. The film was met with mixed reviews compared to the musical, but it became beloved by audiences to the tune of almost $20 million profit in 1982. Let me see what that is in today's money. And according to a quick Google search, $20 million in 1982 is equal to a little over $65 million in 2024 money. So that's a lot of money for a little red-haired girl and her little dog, too. Enter Bernie Kukoff, who created, among other things, Different Strokes with Jeff Harris, a similar to, but legally distinct from, and slightly less musical than, retelling of the Annie story. As that show ended, on another network, I should say, Kukoff had the idea to tell the story again, this time as a musical, but with 6 girls instead of 2 boys. The story is Bernie Kukoff would tell it. Nick Foley, the streetwise Jersey boy, self-made millionaire owner of Foley Foods, comes to the realization that his playboy lifestyle is putting a damper on his business. In an attempt to soften his image and give off the impression of being a devoted family man, he goes to an orphanage to choose one of the girls to come live with him, only to discover that there are 6 girls and they all come as a package deal because they refuse to be separated. They're whisked from their servants' shanty lives to the mansions and parties of Bel Air, where they form a different kind of family with Foley, his new daughters, and their butler, one John Clapper. Foley does this to seal a business deal and doesn't really intend to keep the girls permanently, but Foley's plans change as he grows attached to the girls and he ends up adopting all 6 of them as his legal daughters. Although one of them would disappear between the pilot and the actual series, because, according to production, 6 girls was one too many. The adjustment is huge on both sides as the girls acquire a new father with absolutely no parenting experience. And having spent the past few years in a rundown orphanage, the girls suddenly find themselves in a life of luxury, hence the title of the show. Otherwise, it's the trials and tribulations of the girls and a man who has previously never loved anyone but himself and struggles to cope with his new family. Oh yeah, and the girls, they like to randomly break out into song in what we call a plot device.
Oh.
Yep. Much like the theme music, existing 50s and 60s music was given new lyrics from one Mark Mueller. But if you listen close enough, you can pretty much tell what songs they're going for. So let's talk about the father who never had a daughter and 5 daughters who never had a father. Playing the role of Nick Foley, the founder of Foley Foods.
Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. I got a question.
What's that?
Is he related to Mick Foley?
No, he is not.
Oh, well, it would have been something if the character was related to a pro wrestler. But then again, that wouldn't make any sense because this is set in 1961.
He could have been related to Mick Foley. Maybe he wasn't born yet. Maybe his father knew something that we don't. Anyway, Mick Foley, the founder and CEO of Foley Foods, played by not a Jersey boy, a Brooklyn boy, Joseph Bologna. Best known for his roles on Blame It on Rio and the 1976 disaster film Setup, The Big Bus.
Setup, The Big Bus?
The Big what Bus. The no, the it was a setup of the disaster film, and it was called The Big Bus.
What the hell is that about?
It's about a bus.
Okay.
It's big. It has a giant eye. It traverses the countryside. It's Super Train on the Road, basically.
Oh, okay.
Only every sort of disaster befalls it. It is actually pretty funny. We've talked about Joe Bologna before.
Oh, we did?
Yes. He was in previous entry, Top of the Heap, from 1991.
Oh, my God, yes.
Oh. I was like, I remember this guy before. Oh, yeah, he was in that. And then we have the five girls. The oldest, Rose, at 17, was played by Kimiko Gelman, who was that girl from That Thing all the way up to 2018. But she plays Nicole Talcott, one of the lab techs on CSI Miami. But she worked her way up to the Hunger Games saga and several episodes of 13 Reasons Why. So, yeah, she's been busy. 16-year-old Diane is played by Bridget Michelle, who we have talked about her before, too.
Oh, wow. Where did we talk about her?
She plays the mall manager in the feel-good film of 1996, Greg, Santa with Muscles.
Oh, yes, Santa with Muscles. That was probably, like, Hulk Hogan's best non-no-holds-barred work.
Nowadays, she is the designer and owner of Bridget Schuster, a clothing, shoe, and accessory company, and has pretty much left the rags-to-riches actress life behind.
Well, good for her, I guess.
Middle child Marva, at 15, is played by Tisha, damn, Gina Campbell.
Do we really want to say what she's best known for?
I literally just said it.
Yeah, well.
She was also on My Wife and Kids with Damon Wayans. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, but don't forget she was also one of the singers in Little Shop of Horrors. Remember that?
So, you know, being from that to this, it just made sense.
Now hold on a second. I'm probably never going to get a chance to say it again, but I'm going to sing it right here for you. Martin!
Very nice, Greg. Very nice. The second youngest, Patty, at 14, is played by Blanca DeGar, who was in Dallas, Sunny Spoon, which we've talked about as a future entry, but nowadays is known mostly as a Christian music producer and writer. And rounding out the girls at age 8 is young Mickey Foley, played by Heidi Ziegler, who we talked about in previous entry, Drexel's Class.
Oh, that's right. I do remember her, Drexel's Class.
Of course, she would later go on to play the youngest, actually not even the youngest of the kids in Just the 10 of Us. Just the youngest kid with a speaking role, I guess. She played Sherry Lubbock, which means she would share the stage with future writer of WandaVision and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Matt Shakman.
and the director of Fantastic Four, whenever the hell that comes out.
Pedro Pascal is Mr. Fantastic. I approve.
Yeah, and they got that guy from The Bear as the Thing.
Evan Ross Bacharach.
Yes. He's great on The Bear.
Is there anybody who isn't great on The Bear?
I know, but I love him because he doesn't take any of Jeremy Allen White.
Nobody takes Jeremy Allen White. Not even Jeremy Allen White takes his own shit. There was a sixth girl, Nina Foley, played by Heather McAdam, but she left at the end of the pilot, never to be seen again, unless you count 2 episodes of 90210 and 90 episodes of Sisters.
Oh, Sisters. My mom loved Sisters back in the day.
Kiesel also loved Sisters back in the day.
Oh, man. Did she love it as much as the Colbys?
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, the show gave us Swoozy Kurtz, Patricia Kalember, and Cela Ward. And that fourth lady that I cannot remember right now.
Well, Cela Ward. I mean, what else can you say about her?
Really can't say much. You really can't say anything else. And rounding out the cast, as the butler, John Clapper, is Douglas Seal, who played the voice of the Sultan in 1992's Aladdin. By the way, for my money, best Disney soundtrack of the Golden Age. You heard me, Little Mermaid.
Well, I think it's between either that or Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, God, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
I think just any soundtrack that came from a Disney movie from 1989 to 1994, banger. They called it the Golden Age for a reason. Oh, he also played Santa in Ernest Saves Christmas. But yeah, he died in 1999, sadly, no longer with us, but there you go. So, let's talk about how these girls and this member of the 1% became the most unlikely family on Sunday night. First, they had to conquer Monday night in the form of a pilot. A wealthy businessman decides to soften his cutthroat image by adopting some children. He winds up adopting 6 girls and isn't prepared for the problems that come with them. Lots of guest stars in this episode. Playing Tommy from Your Mother's Stories, Billy Warlock, and then playing a guy named Freddy. Bill Maher. This was before we knew what we know about Bill Maher.
And that's all we're going to say about that.
Another big name playing a lady by the name of Carlotta Newton is Leslie Beavis, who we would remember from, are you ready for this? Spaceballs, Alien Nation, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Who'd she play in Spaceballs?
Commander Zircon. But she, too, was on Your Mother's Stories. She was in 56 episodes of The Young and the Restless. So after conquering Monday night, NBC moved the show to Sundays right after Our House. More on the schedule later. But episode 2, High Society. Nick was not invited to his country club's debutante ball. He signs Rose up to prove a point to the rich snobs, but she's depressed and going through a phase. They call it spaskism. Or spaskism. The Foley household must give her a crash course in etiquette. We have a recurring character in this episode, Amy Hillerman, played by Sarah Buxton, who was in episodes of Glee, Criminal Minds, CSI Miami, and 195 episodes of The Bold and the Beautiful.
Wow, we got a lot of soap actors on this show.
And then as Lowell Taylor, man by the name of Jack Bannon, who was known for Little Big Man in 1970, LA Heat in 1996, Hard Vice in 1994, and being married to Ellen Travolta. So he was related to John Travolta by law.
Now, hold on a second. Would that mean technically he's the stepdad to David Naughton? I'm making it.
Yes. It's a little hard to explain, but it's true. Oh, we also talked about him in previous entry, Camp Wilder, not to mention two episodes of Night Court. Episode 3, Foley versus Foley. Spiro's place, the girl's favorite malt shop, is being shut down to make way for a new development. Nick encourages the girls to protest until he learns that they are actually protesting his new project, the Foley Center. Susan, you care to ring into this?
Uh-oh. But okay, Chico, playing the land developer in this episode is Richard Hurd. And we talked about Richard Hurd a bunch of times on this podcast, but his most notable role, he was Mr. Wilhelm, George's boss, on the Yankees on Seinfeld.
Ooh.
And he was in an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And you know how I know this?
How do you know this?
He has an autographed card in Rittenhouse.
Nice. Another name that you may know and I may know, but nobody else would probably know, playing Miles Parnell is Phil Rubenstein, who was in perhaps three of the best movies to come out of the era. Tango and Cash, where he played Sikowski. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, where he played Garbage Man number one.
Oh yeah, one of the two guardsmen who see the cloaked bird of prey park in that park in San Francisco, and they're like, oh, we didn't see nothing. Yup, yes sirree.
And the factory boss in the opening scene of the only movie from 1987 worth a damn, Mannequin.
Can you recite that scene for me, Chico?
You know, you could get the Dummy of the Week award switcher. Well, she looks really real, doesn't she? I wasn't talking about her!
That was the premiere of our new segment, It Was a Thing on TV Theater.
React. Okay. Episode 4, First Love. Duke is the good-looking, cool guy at school, and Diane is hooked. The only thing is, his friends have a reputation for carrying a little black book. And Nick knows all about it after comparing parenting notes with his golf buddy. So he makes a deal with Diane that if she stays away from Duke, he'll stay away from his latest romantic interest, the classy Jessica. Is Duke really interested in Diane, or is she just a name to add to the little black book? And will Nick keep his end of the bargain to keep his daughter safe? Oh, Lord!
Yes.
I just found out who played the Duke, y'all!
Okay, let me say it. Cody!
Oh, Lord. Playing the Duke, actor and martial artist and all-around idiot, Sasha Mitchell. And that's all we'll say about that.
But playing Jessica.
Playing Jessica, on the other side of the coin, the lovely and talented Mel Harris.
Who, of course, in 1987, would go on to 30-something. You know, that's one of my favorite themes, 30-something.
It's playful and serious. Episode 5, Business is Business. Marva wants to start her own business, but Nick says he won't help her, so she decides to go into the business on her own and buys an old food truck. But her perfect calculations, however, hadn't counted on a backstabbing competitor.
Dun, dun, dun.
And playing said backstabbing competitor, a guy by the name of Skip Ken Osmond.
Oh, Ken Osmond. Of course, he would be the one responsible for this. Now, I have to point out, again, if Gallagher had smashed the watermelon, Ken Osmond could have assisted Gallagher in the smash of the watermelon on Magic Kingdom Hollywood Squares, and boom, we would have had 40 seasons and probably had about 4 movies by now. You might be asking how it would be possible to have 4 Magic Kingdom Hollywood Squares hour movies. Listen, I'm not here to explain it. I mean, the Gong Show got a freaking movie, okay? I'm sure it could have gotten 4 movies along with 40 seasons.
I could see it happening. And playing another guy by the name of Rusty, the legendary 50s crooner himself, Fabian.
Oh yeah, Fabian, who was also on Magic Kingdom Hollywood Squares. So that's 2 people in this episode.
Indeed it is. And then we have, I don't know what his credit was, but we talked about this guy, J.J. Saunders. He was in previous entry, Salvage 1.
Oh my god. You know what his last credit was, Chico?
I know this because I'm looking right at it.
Tammy and the T-Rex, starring Denise Richards and the late Paul Walker.
Oh man.
Oh, you know who's also in this movie?
Who's in this movie?
Terry Kaiser.
Oh boy. But I found a better credit for him. He played the judge in 2 movies from 1988. The first movie was Nightingales. I'm guessing was the pilot for the TV series of the same name with Christy Swanson as a nursing student. And Mac and Me.
Oh, he was in Mac and Me.
He was in Mac and Me.
Who'd he play on Mac and Me?
He also played a judge.
Oh, that's right. He was the judge. I think in that scene where Mac was, and his family were getting sworn in as American citizens.
Yeah. That would be the one.
Oh, hold on. Since we mentioned it, we are legally required to play it every time we mention Mac and Me. There you go. I hope you're happy, Paul Rudd.
Episode 6, Patty's mom. Patty thinks she has found her biological mother, then makes a deal with Nick that she will relent off her search for a while if Nick stays on the same street corner where she saw the woman for an entire week. Said woman, lady by the name of Gloria, is played by Gina Heck, who is known for 2 or 3 seasons, not the first season, but every season afterwards, of Mork and Mindy. She played the wife of Jay Thomas's character.
Oh, yeah.
Episode 7, Bad Blood, Taylor's version. No, I'm kidding. Nick's brother, Frankie, shows up unexpectedly and rekindles old wounds between them. In the meantime, Patty gets in trouble at school for using Uncle Frankie's tactics to get even with another student. Uncle Frankie is played by a man by the name of Joe Cortese, best known as Gio Lo Scudo in 2018's Green Book, Rasmussen in 1998's American History X, and 2 episodes of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Which episodes?
The gang gets whacked, and the gang dances their asses off.
Now, hold on. Are we sure it's not pronounced Joe Cortez, like Dan Cortez?
Well, Dan Cortez also pronounces it both ways.
Okay, well, whichever.
Yeah. Oh, and Greg, we talked about this man, Mr. Joe, in one of your previous Money in the Bank picks.
Which was it?
He played Martin Greenwald in 3 episodes of 18 Wheels of Justice.
Oh, yes, 18 Wheels of Justice.
Another person in this episode, Billy Jane, nay, Billy Jacoby, who we talked about. Actually, I don't know if we talked about him on this podcast before, but I know he was in Parker Lewis Can't Lose, among other things. But aside from that, he was a voice on like half of Saturday Morning, and also that guy from That Thing. Episode 8, Born to Ride. Diane goes for her permit, only to get involved with 2 swindlers trying to fake an injury lawsuit against Diane when she gets into an accident with their vehicle. Oh, Lord. Couple of really big names in this one. Playing, well, I don't have a character name for him, but we have an appearance from America's Ass from the 1980s, Tom Ballard.
Oh, yes, Tom Ballard. Listen, I guarantee you this. He will make the Hall of Fame next year. If he's not in the Hall of Fame now, he's got to be next year.
Indeed. And playing another scammer by the name of Arnie, David Paymer.
Oh, yeah, David Paymer. I believe we've talked about him before, this bias. But he was one of the henchmen for Kurt Fuller in No Holds Barred.
It's true. Of course, if you are subscribed to Prime Video, you probably remember seeing him in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. We didn't talk about him. He was on an episode of Cop Rock.
Yes.
And an episode of Who's the Boss?
Angela.
Angela? He was also on an episode of The Powers of Matthew Starr. So yeah, he was all over the place. Still is. So that was season 1. And all through season 1, the show aired on a cush time slot on Sunday nights between Our House and the Movie of the Week on NBC. Now, here's the thing. You're not beating Murder, She Wrote. And you're not beating Wonderful World. But being the highest rated show on NBC that night, that had to count for something. Because NBC decided, you know what we're going to do? We are going to renew the show. But we're going to move it to Friday.
What?
Why aren't you happy? I could tell you why you're not happy. Because you've seen this before and you know exactly what's about to happen.
Yes, we know exactly what's about to happen. But before we see what's about to happen, let's take a little break and listen to some commercials from 1987. And we'll come right back.
NBC Sunday Night at the Movies will return following these messages.
Friday, it's a knockout night of competition. Fight Card number 1 is the main event, featuring Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. On Fight Card number 2, Crockett and Subs are in tag team competition with a mean herd of Holsteins. And on Fight Card number 3, Robert Stack wrestles with the incredible Unsolved Mysteries. The main event, Miami Vice and Unsolved Mysteries, the champions of Friday night.
This is NBC News Digest. Here is Chuck Scarborough, NBC News.
Good evening. Secretary of State Schultz and House Speaker Jim Wright wound up in a shouting match today over Wright's role in Central America peace negotiations. In Geneva, Soviet and American arms negotiators will meet again tomorrow, and they're going to try to finish work on a treaty eliminating all medium-range missiles in time for next month's Reagan-Gorbachev summit in Washington. And 3-year-old Tabitha Foster, who received a 5-organ transplant 2 weeks ago, has recovered enough to take short walks. And even though she has never tasted solid food, doctors say she is asking for pizza. I'm Chuck Scarborough in New York. More news later on this NBC station.
Shoney's Breakfast Bar is brand new, all over again. and with our great new toppings, scrambled eggs will never be the same. The sausage, rice, and hash browns are new. We've added more fresh fruits, plus fruit salad, cottage cheese, and tasty yogurt. The cinnamon drop biscuits are new. So are the apple cakes and sweet rolls. And now, there's French toast and pancakes every morning. The breakfast bar at Shoney's. Now, it's brand new. Again.
It's game show host week on Scrabble.
You devil, you.
I feel so stupid.
I'm sorry. Catch the Scrabble babble today. Thursday, stop by Cheers for a belly full of laughs and a heart full of romance.
How about a nude barbecue?
Then meet the gang on Nothing in Common.
You guys are the greatest.
They're making commercials that'll make you fall down laughing.
I love it.
On Nothing in Common and on L.A. Law.
Will you marry me?
A romantic moment, an unforgettable wedding. Thursday.
And now we return to Bay Coven, starring Pamela Sue Martin, Tim Matheson, Barbara Billingsley, and Woody Harrelson.
And we're back in.
Before we start with Season 2, we need to note that they updated the theme song in Season 2, so here it is for you.
Life takes you up, and it can take you down. Like a hurricane, it throws your feelings all around. But here we are, back on solid ground. Ain't it funny how one day you're lost and then found? Cause now we're together, there's someone to catch us when we fall. Now we're together, and nothing else matters at all. When you go from
And we begin Season 2 on a Friday night with this episode, Vegas Rock. Because two big things in the late 50s, early 60s, Las Vegas, rock and roll. The girls travel to Vegas in hopes of obtaining Elvis's guitar for a school auction, all the while dodging their stepfather, Nick, who's in town as well.
You won't believe what happened.
Oh, we got some names in this season premiere. Now, we don't have a character name on IMDb. But in this episode is Mark McClure, who I know we've talked about before in this podcast. But he's best known for being Jimmy Olsen in the Christopher Reeve Superman movies and Marty McFly's brother in Back to the Future's 1 and 3. He was in 2, but his scenes were left on the cutting room floor.
And also in this episode, playing a character named Ruby, Priscilla Pointer, best known as Dr. Elizabeth Sims from A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
As we all know, that's the best Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
And then playing Michael Rapp, if he's not in the Hall of Fame yet, he will be soon, Alex Rocco.
You never make it, Joe. Why don't you just give up?
But oh, Chico, I think we've saved the best for last. Playing Roger is Russ Tamblyn, who played Dr. Jacoby on one of my favorite shows of all time that's not Wings, Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks is your incredibly hard to follow murder mystery, Wings.
That is true, yes. But you know who is his son-in-law? You know?
The guy who's married to Amber Tamblyn?
Yes, who would that be?
I don't remember.
David Cross.
Ah, there you go. And then you have as another no-named on IMDb, Garrett Graham, of course, from Parker Lewis and The Critic. That was episodes 1 and 2. Okay, you got a two-parter there. Two for the price of one, baby. Episode 11, Once in a Lifeguard. Rose is determined to become a lifeguard after failing her first test and being ridiculed by the instructor for being a girl. Nick helps train her. She passes her second test, beating the time of all the male hopefuls, thus gaining the respect of her instructor as well as her lifeguard certificate. Meanwhile, Patty falls in love with a baseball-loving, handsome, older lifeguard. She decides to ditch her tomboy ways and win his attention, only to have her heart crushed when he begins dating her sister, Diane! One famous name and one infamous name, playing Sean Howland, the leader of the lifeguards, is Ken Olant, who is basically in everything on TV from 1987 to 1993, inclusive. And then playing Curtis is Scott Schwartz, best known for his role in A Christmas Story,
where he got his tongue stuck to a pole.
And it hurt like hell. Episode 12. That's cheating. Rose struggles with chemistry and in an act of desperation, cheats on her test. Meanwhile, Mickey really wants to win the Girl Scout yellow beanie and pledges to sell over 500 boxes of cookies.
500 boxes of cookies?
If you set up a chair, like right next to a dispensary, that's an afternoon right there. Okay, lots of names to go over here, not just in the cast, but also the director. Sandy Ward returns as Al Schweikert, business partner, best known for The Perfect Storm and Under Siege and Airplane 2, the sequel. Playing Mr. Matza is Graham Jarvis, who is best known for his roles in Mr. Mom, Misery, and 16 episodes of Seventh Heaven, but playing Arnold, Rob Stone from Mr. Belvedere.
Yes, Mr. Belvedere. And did you see what I posted in the random reel section?
I'm about to take a look here. By the way, if you follow us on the Instagram, we have a new random reel section because the other four were getting kind of crowded.
No, the other three. This is the fourth one.
Oh, this is the fourth one. Okay.
This is the fourth one.
Okay. So if you like random reels, there you go. Oh, Lord, I remember this.
Now, can you describe what this is?
This is basically when Wesley turns Mr. Belvedere over to the feds.
Because he ratted that he cheated on the test. God damn you, Wesley.
Moral of the story, stop self-snitching. But you know who directed this episode?
Who directed this episode?
Chris Carter.
Oh, that Chris Carter from the X-Files.
That Chris Carter from the X-Files.
Oh, good thing. I was thinking at first it was the Chris Carter from Minnesota Vikings.
No. Episode 13, Wilderness Blues. Nick is fed up with the girls arguing and decides everyone needs a little quality family time. So he takes the girls on a weekend camping trip, which starts out disastrous, but later brings them closer together.
Oh.
Say it, Greg.
Playing the role of Jack in this episode, and we just mentioned him a while ago. It was a thing on TV Hall of Famer, Terry Kaiser. Aw, Bernie!
Episode 14. Dear Diary, the girls fight to save their favorite teacher, Miss Newman. Meanwhile, Patty is having trouble with a writing assignment, so Miss Newman gives her a diary to compose a story in. Playing Ms. Newman, Ellen Newman, that is, Robin Curtis.
We've mentioned multiple times on this podcast. What, we mentioned her in Tag Team, I remember? Of course, we covered her in a couple of live shows because she was savage in Star Trek 3 and 4. And this is the second time we've mentioned this in this episode. She was in Santa with Muscles.
All of these castmates from Santa with Muscles, not one mention of Mila Kunis.
Or Brenda Song.
But playing Phil Johnson, legendary actor Dick Van Patten.
And of course, let's not forget, since Mike's not here, I have to say it, he had a card in Americana, and I own a Swatch card of his from that set.
Is it from Spaceballs or Eight Is Enough?
I don't know. What, you think someone would make a Swatch out of, like, his robe from Spaceballs?
Probably! Episode 15, Hunk in the House. Nick's godson, Billy, comes to visit due to family problems at home. Diane is immediately infatuated with him and goes to Rose, who is also falling for Billy, for help. Playing Billy, Billy Galento, that is Nick's godson, Richard Grieco from 21 Jump Street and his short-lived spinoff.
That's right. And he has a cameo in the mid-credit scene in 22 Jump Street.
Episode 16. Marva in the Key of C. Marva discovers that Rose's new piano teacher, Celia Smith, once was a famous singer known as Cece. Without her permission, Marva volunteers Cece to perform at their high school dance. Playing Celia Richards, a.k.a. Cece, Margaret Avery, best known as Shug in 1985's The Color Purple, and also 39 episodes of Being Mary Jane, which is a credit that Gabrielle Union is both proud of and would love to forget. Episode 17, Beauty and the Babe. Diane decides to enter a beauty pageant with Nick's permission as long as she promises to keep her grades up. Meanwhile, Mickey wants a unicorn, so she dresses up as one to try and catch one of her very own. Playing Babe Adair. We've talked about this lady before, numerous times. Shannon Tweed.
Yes. Mrs. Jean Simmons.
Another beauty pageant contestant was played by Eva LaRue, but she doesn't have a name on IMDb so far as our research is concerned. But hey, I get to reference CSI Miami. And to tell the truth, season 2 from 2001, I haven't forgotten, Mike. Playing Mr. Dodson from Coach, Kenneth Kimmons. But playing Brady Ledeen, somebody we've talked about recently in a rerun. Oh, sorry, a best of episode. Peter Barton. Matthew Starr himself. Slightly powerless in this episode, though. Oh, we got to talk about the MC in this episode. You know who played the MC in this episode?
Who played the MC in this episode?
Ed Kooky Burns.
Oh, my God. This episode has everybody.
Pretty much. And it was written by Chris Carter. Episode 18. Russian Holiday. The Russian diplomat and his son visit. Rose decides he's too stiff and needs to be shown a good time, so she sneaks him out of the embassy without anybody's knowledge or consent. All right, couple of names in this. Playing Victor Leskov, the Russian diplomat. Joseph Mascolo, best known as Peterson in Jaws 2, and Stefano Demera in 1,800 47 episodes of Days of Our Lives. I do not believe we've had somebody appear in that many episodes of a single show. Playing his son Alex, Jay Pickett, best known as Frank Scanlon in 762 episodes of Port Charles, but sadly no longer with us. And playing a role without a name on IMDb, future It Was a Thing Hall of Famer, Larry Anderson. Episode 19, A Very Foley Christmas. Christmas approaches and the girls find out a new social worker has been assigned to their case. Nick's scheduled meeting with the worker gets delayed because he has car trouble, so the girls entertain her while they wait for Nick. Playing said new caseworker, Luis McMillan, Kay Callen, She Lois and Clark fame. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a clip episode, but it's one with Wolfman Jack in it.
Oh, yes. Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, he plays a guy named Morgan W. Hollywood.
It's the fakest ass name I've ever heard in my life.
Episode 20. Guess who's coming to slumber? Marva runs for class president and stoops to the level of her competitors by making false promises. Meanwhile, Patty steals a dying racehorse.
Oh,
that's what I was waiting for. Playing a guy named Vince, Danny Bonaducci, the once and future Danny Partridge himself. And finally, episode 21, Sweet 16. Oh boy. The Cuban Missile Crisis hits full blast as Russia threatens to attack the United States. Nick builds a bomb shelter when Mickey becomes afraid of being vaporized, and Diane plans a very emotional Sweet 16 party, hoping for harmony with Russia. Playing Leo Novak in this episode, David Coburn, best known for his role as the titular captain in Captain Planet. And playing Ralph Huntington, Chris Pine's daddy, Robert Pine, who we talked about, Greg,
in Good Morning, Miss Bliss.
That's right. That's right.
Because he was Zach's dad. And let's remember, Zach Morris is and always will be trash.
All right. We also have a vocal performance by Frank Welker. It Was a Thing Hall of Famer Frank Megatron Welker. Gotta put some respect on that name. But even that was not enough to save the show from the axe, because they did put it on Friday, but it was leading off Friday against ABC's lineup, which by this point would have Growing Pains, Max Headroom, and 2020. And Growing Pains did the strong thing and kicked off the season with a two-parter. From then on, Rags to Riches had better luck with Full House and I Married Dora on ABC. But then there's the thing that was on CBS at the time. It was up against Dallas for a week. Dallas did its damage, moved back to 9 o'clock, and gave the time slot to Beauty and the Beast, which also did damage. Of course, it did not help matters that the show was periodically preempted for baseball's postseason.
Yeah, because it would have been the league championship series in 87.
Cardinals and Giants.
Which, as I've always mentioned on this podcast, was the Jeffrey Leonard one flap down in LCS.
And he hits a fastball in the air to left field. Coleman going back to the track, to the wall, leaps in the air. It's gone. Home run. He stopped too. Watch this trot.
Okay, Chico, in its last airing on January 15th of 1988, it did an 8-6 rating up against Beauty and the Beast, which did a 14-7 on CBS. And on ABC, you had Full House, which was in its first season at 8 o'clock with a 13 rating. And then Mr. Belvedere did a 13-8.
Yep. It was doing just enough to survive, but with Miami Vice at 9 o'clock, basically keeping NBC above water, it was only a matter of time before NBC got the call to cancel Rags to Riches. Now, let's just say you do want to see all of Rags to Riches. It was released on DVD in 2012 in Region 1. It was also released in 2011 on DVD in Germany. But of course, if you do want to see the series but can't be bothered with cumbersome hard media, you can watch the entire run right now for free on YouTube.
And I gotta say, this is a really good show. And Tubi, please, if you can get the rights to this, because I know you'll air any old crap on Tubi, put this on Tubi. I mean, if you can air, of all things, the Urban Wrestling Federation.
Oh, God, don't even remind me of that.
You can air this.
You can tell some bad faith actors were behind the Urban Wrestling Federation, because it just basically plays up to a whole lot of stuff.
Let me just say, if I want to watch a UWF, I'll watch Herb Abrams' UWF. Thank you very much.
I was just about to say, we don't even have the benefit of hookers and blow.
Wait, I'm sure there's plenty of hookers and blow in the Urban Wrestling Federation, but still.
Again, Heidi Ziegler, Joe Bologna, Gina Campbell. They would all go on to bigger and better things. And of course, a lot more people remember this show, not so much for the hokey storytelling, but for the over-elaborate dance numbers.
Yeah, on the DVD box, this basically says it was Glee before Glee.
It was Glee before Glee. And, you know, it worked for its time, but then NBC gave it too much confidence. And ultimately, Rags to Riches became Back to Rags as a thing on TV.
Now, since Mike's not here, live for this, we have his presence here in this pre-taped match game, Hollywood Squares Hour Update.
It's time for this weekend match game, Hollywood Squares Hour History. This is it. We've officially reached the two-thirds mark in Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour's run. It is week 26, and among the celebrities we have this week are Renee Enriquez, Richard Klein, Abby Dalton, Phyllis Diller, Charles Nelson Reilly, Chuck Wagner, Lydia Cornell, and Leonard Fry. Now, in terms of big wins this week, we had a $10,000 win with Richard Klein on Monday. No win on Tuesday. A $10,000 win with Abby Dalton on Wednesday. No win on Thursday. And then a $20,000 win with John on Friday. So there we go, alternating win-loss, win-loss, win again, like we've done in the recent past. Now, next week, we begin the final trimester, if you will, of Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour. And we've got a lot of big names returning. A number of names we've seen previously in the run. Nobody really knew, or at least if they're new to Match Game Hollywood Squares, they're not big celebrities that are new. So that's it for the show. Let's close up the shop, guys.
Well, that is going to do it for us here at It Was a Thing on TV. Remember, you can go to our website at itwasathingontv.com and peruse through the other 466 episodes that we have waiting for you. That also includes minisodes, live watches, instant reactions, remasters, best of, the whole works. And of course, we're on all social media at It Was a Thing on TV, except for Facebook, where we are at It Was a Thing on TV podcast. And if you're looking for us on Mastodon, remember, it's It Was a Thing on TV at tvwatch.party. Remember to subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts can be streamed, either at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Audible, our indie streamers. We love our indie streamers. Don't forget, we are also on YouTube. Like, subscribe. Don't forget to hit that notification bell so you can stay up to date on all future uploads, including what's coming up on the podcast next time.
Now, Chico, we love Leonard Fry here on this podcast. What if I told you before Mr. Smith he was on another show?
Are you kidding?
And what if I told you that also on this show was the dad from Silver Spoons?
Now I know you're kidding.
But what if I told you that Mino Pelucci was also on this show?
Now you're just making it up.
Well, I'm not making this up. Well, join us next week when we take a ride to the West and hitch our wagons in the next installment of It Was a Thing on TV. For myself and Chico, and for Mike, thank you for listening, and we'll see it right here next week for that episode.
Wow!
You shot the